Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. BFFT. Live from the home studios presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the Bald Faced Truth.
Hour number three of the show comes at 2 o'clock if you're listening in real time. I appreciate those of you out there listening on the podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Make sure you give us some feedback. I recently went round and round with Apple Podcasts and the team there because I was trying to tell them Alabama Adriana podcasts the entire show. Then she podcasts the individual interviews and she packages everything in a great, easily digestible manner that's awesome. And some people were complaining that the individual interviews were not all available on their phones. Apple tried to blame SoundCloud. SoundCloud said, no, it's not us. Alabama Adriana's phone had all the episodes. Mine didn't. And ultimately, Apple told me, no, there's no problem, no problem. And then they all started showing up again. I don't know what happened there. Alabama Adriana, how often do you think about the podcast or get asked about the podcast or do you dream about the podcast?
Well, I think about it all the time when I'm at work. I try to separate, you know, like personal time, work time. But yep. I do end up thinking I sometimes in my earlier days would worry that like I forgot something and want to go check it, you know, have those sort of not really nightmares, but like quick flashes of, oh, crap.
Yes.
But I haven't. Yeah, I feel like I've been doing it for so long now that I trust myself to do it right and to check my work. And after that, I just kind of feel at ease about it.
I also think that I was doing some math the other day on how many shows that we've done. 13 years. You know, that's 5 shows a week. Figure probably on air for about 48 weeks during the year. So that's, 240 episodes of the show per year times 13 years. We were over 3,000 shows. So that's like 3,120 shows and counting, probably more like 3,300 and counting by now. And then Adriana does, on average, how many elements are there? Because there's the show itself, and then there's, like on today's show, there'll be 2 other interviews. It'll be Austin Meek, and it will be our guest in hour number one, Jim Metzl, and then it'll be probably maybe Anna's podcast. So there could be as many as 3 or 4 episodes in a day?
Yeah, usually 3, sometimes 4, sometimes 5.
Hey, okay, so John.
Yeah.
I hate to break up the conversation here. Have a little bit of an emergency of sorts at the building.
Uh-oh.
Fire alarm's going off.
Okay.
It's not a test, and I've been, myself and Adriana have been ordered to leave.
All right. You guys leave. You leave. Leave us on air.
Yeah.
Leave us on air.
This is you. This is all you time, if you're all right with that.
You leave us on air, and then Anna and I will handle the broadcast, and then we'll just keep people here, and then we'll deal with it when you get back.
You're a rock star. All right.
All right.
I'll be in touch.
All right. Anna, they are having a fire alarm at the PacWest Center, and our mission control, Alabama Adriana, Judah, all of the interns have been ordered to evacuate the building. Right now, we could do anything we damn well please on this radio show for the next, I don't know, probably 20, 30 minutes.
And there'd be no one to turn it off.
There's no check. There's no check. There's no balance. We have total control, total autonomy.
So they're doing a fire drill.
It's not a fire drill. They had an alarm. Like,
okay.
If we suddenly go off in the Portland market, it ain't because somebody pulled the switch. It's because that building might be on fire. So if you're in the building and listening to this, get safely to the stairs. Get out of the building. They used to do the fire alarms. They did them, you know, every couple of months down there. And it may just be that somebody's pulled an alarm. It may just be that there's a small incident on some other floor. That building has like 40, 50 floors. I don't know. Maybe more. And then it may just be something minor. But I was just talking to Adriana about the number of podcast episodes that she's been involved in, because I was going somewhere magnificent with it when I got interrupted. But we're talking about five shows a week, as many as four podcasts a day, because she will break out the individual interviews plus the show itself. And this going on for 13 plus years, I have that down around 12,500 individual podcast episodes.
Jeez.
Okay, 12,500. She's probably only been involved, though, with maybe like 3 years. She can't speak for herself now. But I kind of think we're coming up on a, like, at some time, at some point in the next 5 months or so, we're going to hit episode number 15,000.
Wow.
And I know she made a big deal when we hit the 1 millionth listen.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was nothing. Like, it felt like it took us 2 or 3 years to get to 1 million.
Mm-hmm.
The next 500,000 happened in like 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird how the podcast audience is going. What podcasts do you listen to? A podcast? Can you listen to podcasts with kids?
I used to when they were in normal school. When I wasn't homeschooling, I had more time to listen to podcasts. And there are definitely some that are my favorite, if that's what you're asking. There's actually some good kid ones that I like. There's one called Brains On, which is all about science and explains science, you know, in a kid-friendly manner. It actually has a lot of kids' voices on it that are narrating. And that's pretty cool to listen to with the girls, actually. But, yeah, and then there's just, like, Story Nori. There's a lot of, like, you know, interesting kind of bedtime story podcasts that we might listen to. But we were just talking about this yesterday. It's like when you become a parent, you kind of relinquish a lot of your personal preferences to just appease the children on what they want to listen to. Like, I'm not going to be driving around in the car with them, making them listen to the podcast that I actually want to listen to.
Adriana and Judah are on their way, apparently, to the street. They are now being told it was a non-emergency.
That's good.
And they're allowed to come back already.
Oh, okay.
I kind of liked it.
Oh, wow.
I kind of liked it where it was dicey, and I was like, you guys were going to call in from the street. If that happens again, you guys call in from the street, I can take control of the computer from here and put you guys on.
Oh, that's true. You know what? It is an emergency. I got to go.
He's got to go back. That happened back in the day. Do you guys know the story? I don't know if you guys, how many people know this story, but once upon a time, one of the people who was working on the radio show, we had one guy who was living in the studio. Do you know that story, Anna?
That was so odd.
That's radio.
Yeah.
Somebody, I actually am living in the studio now.
You kind of are. Yeah.
Living in the home studio.
But you're not like sleeping here.
No, not in the studio.
Yeah.
But I'm literally sleeping within probably 100 feet of
yeah.
where the studio
what
is.
What was that about anyway? And how was that discovery made? Was it just like people would be arriving at 5 o'clock in the morning and be like, wow, that he's here early?
I just noticed he was walking around in a bathrobe.
Oh.
And then his hair.
You're making that up.
He had bedhead and he had like slippers on. And I thought, gosh, he's acting like he lives the place. No, he said he was having a hard time finding a place to live. And it became evident that over a period of time that he was sleeping in the offices. And somebody finally caught him because they came in on a weekend and he was hanging out in the office sleeping.
But it wasn't like he was an on-air person,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, he was a host of a show.
Yeah.
He had a job. He was moving from another market.
Uh-huh.
He didn't know anybody.
Yeah.
And as I understand it, he had some issues going on personally with... He was, working... I think they were going through a divorce or something, uh-huh. and he was not able to put a... And he was too proud. He was not able to put a deposit down on an apartment.
Oh.
And he did not have access to the funds, and so he was waiting.
See, I didn't know.
It was kind of a sad story.
That's really sad. I thought it was just sort of like this eccentric period.
I think it's a great idea. If I didn't have a wife and three kids...
You would I'd be live at the radio
I'd be
station?
Living down there. They got a shower down there. They got a kitchen down there. No rent.
There's a snack room.
It's always exciting. Something
Vending
going on.
Machine.
I could be live 24/7. You know, I'm on the air.
Yeah.
I'm in the, don't mind me. I'm toweling off now in the shower.
That's
I think it would be a tremendous experience to do that. What was it? Judah, Adriana, what was it?
Some bogus false alarm, probably. That's it's kind of annoying, to be honest with you, when these things happen and they have no, like, and it wasn't like a test. Somebody probably just pulled the alarm on accident.
That's what
I
said.
And I normally stay seated, you know, running the show with you and Adriana.
Yeah,
and
not then, as committed these days.
Yeah. And, well, I had two different people who rank above me tell me to get out and that we had to get out and tell John to keep talking. I'm like, whatever.
Yeah, just keep talking, Gonzano. That's it.
Was that you heavy breathing as you came back to the mic, Judah?
It was.
Do you need to do some cardio?
Here's my other theory. Yeah, my other theory is that whoever pulled the alarm knows that I haven't been exercising the last few days, and I needed to get my sweat on. So I went down 3 flights of stairs only to come back up again and panting like a dog. I mean, God,
three flights.
That's cruel. It's cruel.
It's good for you. It's good for you.
Adriana, what did you grab when they said you had to leave?
Everything. My salad, my headphones,
everything
but the show sheet.
It's an emergency. Get your salad. Get out of the building.
I got my big salad. Just going to make
it out alive. I was down there one. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just saying I wanted to finish my lunch.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the building one day. And I had University of Portland Athletic Director Scott Lakem with me, and we were having coffee. Okay? It's an important discussion. We're having this coffee, and we're talking about basketball and progress of his program, and I'm more or less interviewing him. And all of a sudden, somebody pulled the alarm, or there was a drill. Now, I'm standing outside with the athletic director, continuing to have this awkward sort of interaction with him that... You know, that's when you find out he's just a normal, regular guy. He just, you know, he just kind of went, let's roll with it. We'll go outside and we'll have the fire alarm. Should we be doing alarms in our own houses?
Yeah, we totally should. We should be practicing our, like, fire emergency evacuation plan, you know.
Do we have a plan?
Well, the other day I pulled out what's supposed to be our emergency ladder. Like, we have this thing lying around. And I realized, like, I've never actually unfurled it to see how it would work. And, like, do you hang it out a second story window? Like, how does this thing work? I couldn't even get the thing untangled for, like, 10 minutes. I would be dead. So, yes, that would stand to reason that we should have a drill.
I picked up that ladder.
We need a safety committee.
I did what every man would do. And I said, oh, it's simple. Here's what you do. And then I proceeded to... dangle it off the ledge outside the house, and I realized pretty quickly I didn't know what I was doing either with this thing. I couldn't figure it out either.
I thought you figured it out.
I kind of did. It's not made for the window that we were trying to put it out.
Oh, that would be helpful.
We need
in
to
an
move
emergency
it.
Situation.
I think we need to go to a slide. Maybe
a slide,
one of those inflatable slides that comes off the side of the 747.
Oh, my gosh.
I think that would work much better
in
that situation.
No, I think responsible families do this. They, like, map out a plan. They have a fire evacuation drill, you know.
Do they, though? We kind of have a...
You're supposed to. That's what, like, the fire departments tell your kids when they visit at their school. And they say, what's your family's fire emergency plan? And you're supposed to do it, right?
I'll never forget the Christmas party we had when...
Oh, jeez.
We had the good people from Huber's come and serve their Spanish coffees at their Christmas party. And becomes kind of a tradition. I love the Spanish coffees. I like the people at Huber's. They have a good story, family-owned business. And so we invite them to come serve the Spanish coffees. But the guy serving the Spanish coffees did a great job. Then he packed up and then he left. But he had a candle that was on his table that was burning.
No, it wasn't his candle. It was our candle.
I thought it was his candle.
No.
No, he was using it, wasn't he?
No, this was our candle.
This is not his fault then.
Yeah, no,
All these years I blamed him.
No, let's not assign blame. This had nothing to do with Huber's.
I'm blaming him.
This is pure stupidity on my part. No. We had a candle decoration kind of thing.
Like, I thought he was using it to light the Spanish coffee.
He might have been, but it was only there because, like, it was there as, like, as a Christmas decoration.
Maybe.
And it was a really, like, old school wired kind of candle holder.
It was stupid.
And I remember, here's the rub, is before the party, we did a walkthrough. I did a walkthrough with my mom, and she took one look at that candle, and she went, "That doesn't look safe." And I was like, yeah, Mom, whatever. Yeah,
we're smarter than that.
Yeah. So
don't tell us what to do.
Later in the night, I mean, it was really late. We had just like stragglers left at that point.
Well, we were standing in what is like the man cave bar area of the house. And I'll never forget, we had the producer of the radio show then, Chris Brown, Cadillac Chris Brown. We had some other people there. And then all of a sudden, I heard the fire alarm go off. And I looked up. And I have never seen that much smoke in one place. Like, it was literally like when you're a kid and they tell you stop, drop, and roll, all of that. And I had in my hand an alcoholic beverage on ice. Jeez. And I ran into the room where this decoration was burning. And I think he was using it to light his Spanish coffees at the beginning.
Maybe.
The table was against the wall. And unfortunately, that candle had burned down. The tablecloth was on fire. The table was on fire, and it was burning up the wall.
Uh-huh.
And the room just had just this plume of dark smoke. I instinctively grabbed the tablecloth and folded it over itself.
Which is good.
It was a good move.
Good
and
move.
I threw my alcoholic beverage on it, which is not a good move.
Not a good move.
And then it essentially put the fire out, though, when I did that. Like, I wasn't thinking about burning myself. And then I picked up the tablecloth. And I carried it out to the front door and dropped it on the doorstep because it was just smoke. And that's when I noticed the fire engine. There's a fire engine. It parked in front of your house. Like, that's not a thing you're used to.
Awful. So embarrassing.
Firefighters.
Because our like fire alarm system is connected. Like, it's monitored. So because, you know, the fire alarm started going off, the alarm company was actually calling both of our cell phones.
I was busy putting out a fire.
And I was not with my cell phone or not paying attention to it. And because they didn't get through to us, they automatically send, you know, police, fire, whatever. And
the Canzanos are on fire.
The engine.
The Canzano house is on fire.
So
get there.
So embarrassing. Oh.
But like three or four firefighters come just barreling up the stairs,
yep,
the steps in front of the house. And they, as they pass me, they say, "Where's the candle?" Like, how did they know that?
And you said, "Oh, it's here in the blanket." And
I said, "How do you know it's a candle?"
Yeah.
As he went by, and he says, "It's always a candle.
This time of year, it's always a candle."
He knew that it was a candle. So don't use a candle with your decorate this. I know it's great. Incense. There's a whole company, candles, whatever, in the mall that's based on that. Use a fake candle.
A lot of our friends and neighbors gave us fake candles, battery-operated candles, as gifts for the following Christmas.
I keep thinking about how many minutes do you think we are away from it being really bad?
Oh, gosh. It was going to happen fast. So if that whole wall had caught on fire, that would have been bad.
I think it was probably 90 seconds, 2 minutes maybe, more, and it would have been a real problem. And our kid's bedroom is right above that. One of the kids. Kid slept right through it. Fire alarm, fire engines, you know. And it's embarrassing for you because you, as a reporter, are covering fires. You're dealing with all these people.
Oh, the very next day, I went to work. I was reporting at K2 News, and they said, "Hey, let's do a story today about holiday party fire safety." And I was laughing to myself because I was like, I can't believe this. And of course, I got assigned to do the story. So, and it involved like calling, you know, a fire department and asking somebody to do a walkthrough with us on a house and, you know, point out all the things that might be fire hazards that you're not paying attention to when you're having a holiday party. And the firefighter that I interviewed was with Portland Fire, who at the very end of the interview said to me with this knowing look, "Huh, that's so interesting that you got assigned to this story." And I was like, "What do you mean? What are you talking about?" They knew. They had already heard from other fire departments that this had happened at our house. This was like less than 24 hours later. So embarrassing.
I love how you fell on the sword and you said it was your idea to put that decoration out. I don't think it went down like that.
No, it really was. I know
you had
was.
You had some candleless decorations already. You mm-hmm. were already on that.
Nope, that kick. Was my decoration. It was because it was like a nostalgic decoration from, you know, when I was like, I think it was like passed down from when I was younger. So I wanted to put it out.
We kept the table. It's got a big mark in the center of it. It got burned and charred.
Now it's just covered with paint, glue, yeah. and glitter.
It's a memory. It's a good memory. I remember the next year, people came to the party and they were like, listen, are we burning this place down or what? Like,
not this year.
Not this year. All right, leave it here. You got the Bald-Faced Truth statewide on the BFT Radio Network. Grab a podcast for this radio show or any of the interviews on this show by subscribing to the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show podcast on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Google Play, Stitcher. Wherever you get a podcast, you can get the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show. I want to talk some sports. My wife's in studio. We are going to kick this around. You have already been on record saying you would not be interested going to a college football game. What if people are spaced out, 6 feet apart, sanitized in the stadium? Is it just too much trouble?
No. If the spacing was cool, then I'd go for it. Probably, I don't know if I'd go with the kids because it's one thing to like go and enjoy it as a spectator. It's another to like be managing them.
That's mostly what it's about, isn't it? You liked Oregon State. They have that family section that's
yes.
underneath the end zone. You loved going down there, letting the kids were playing games and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it was great. I didn't see any of the game, but that family section under the bleachers was awesome. Or under, what are they called? Bleachers?
The end zone stands or whatever.
Yeah. No, they had like, you know, inflatable things that you could throw a football into and you can try to hit a baseball and that kind of thing. It was good. Good for kids.
Sports are trying to get back. Youth sports has become a big topic, and you know, it's polarized a lot of people. And I feel for parents. I'm caught in the middle on this one because it's very rare that I get in that position. But I feel like parents, I understand why they're frustrated. They're not getting a lot of direction from Governor Kate Brown's office. I also understand why they're not getting direction because there are more important things going on than whether or not you can play a Little League game. There have been for the last month or whatever, but still I'm frustrated. Then I'm caught because I know what sports mean. I know how important it is. I know socially it's important. I know psychologically it's important. We talk all the time about the benefits of sports, being on a team, knowing what it is to think about others, not just yourself all the time. But I'm caught here because I am convinced that we're going to see a little spike here. I'm not sure it's going to affect kids. I hope people don't die. But we're already seeing the 7-day moving average for infections in a variety of states, including the state of Oregon, are at a 7-day high. Where do you stand when it comes to kids getting back to playing sports?
I think doesn't it kind of depend a little bit on the sport itself? Or are we just saying all sports are bad? Like, if you look at, soccer, I suppose. You know, you're pretty spaced out on the field. I'm not an epidemiologist, so I don't really know. But
you're not touching the ball. You're using your feet, but you are. The soccer players are in close proximity to each other if you're playing a game.
But you are touching the ball if it goes out of the bounds, and then you're throwing it in, right?
I hadn't thought about
like,
that.
Don't they? You know,
kick it in.
Yeah. So they'd have to change the rules around that.
How about swimming? Can we swim? Can kids swim? Separate lanes? Every other lane? Mm-hmm. Is it safe to jump in the water? Sharing water? Is that okay?
I don't think sharing water is a problem.
You're touching molecules that other kids are touching? I don't, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, these are questions for people that understand, like, the virus much better than we do.
What do you tell parents,
I suppose
parents,
indoor
though?
Versus outdoor swimming would be different, right? Like, if you were in an outdoor pool like they have at Mount Hood Community College, that's probably more feasible.
What do you tell parents? that are frustrated, because there are Facebook groups that are dedicated to this. I'm being lobbied left and right. My friends who have kids who play sports are saying, hey, you need to bang the drum louder for this. And I'm just kind of frozen right now.
Yeah.
Because I go, I need more data. I need like 2 more weeks.
Yeah.
But I've said that all along. Every 2 weeks I go, I need 2 more weeks.
Right. I don't know. Maybe I'm in the minority on this, but I do think that patience is a virtue. Like, I get that kids need to socialize. Believe me, I would love to, you know, get back to normal life and be able to get together and have play dates and things like that. But we're just really not there yet. The few gatherings that we've had, we've pretty strictly tried to enforce, you know, space between the kids. With little kids, that's really hard, especially with the younger ones. And we're just like, in the end, every family kind of has to do what is right for them, right?
Yeah. Dr. Bod came on the show yesterday.
And yeah. What did he say?
He said the idea that your kid is being psychologically or socially harmed is theoretical. And the idea that your kid could contract COVID-19 is not a theoretical thing. Huh. He said that's a virus. It exists in the world. So he's saying, look, with parameters, he allowed his sons to play soccer. They have to be 10 feet apart.
Kids outside their family.
Outside their family. 10 feet apart. They can do drills. They can't participate in games. He says competition against other teams is off the table. Huh. He's just not going there. He says the upside isn't there.
Yeah.
But he also, pointed out that the ideal way to solve this would be to do some kind of trial where you have multiple teams. But he said ethically, you could never get anybody on board, anybody medically on board, to do a trial because it's against sort of the basic oath in medicine to subject kids to being harmed. And let's see what happens. Let one league do it and let's see what happens. But I think there are some parents out there. I'm going to play devil's advocate. Okay. Is it possible that the parents are the ones who miss the sports?
Very much so. Yeah, absolutely. Because I think especially parents who are really plugged into, you know, youth sports, there's a community around that. Like, you know, like any time that we've had a kid that was involved in something like that, like, you become friends with the parents of the other kids. And there's a definite loss of community right now if you're not able to gather for those events.
And I said I'd never be the guy who got sucked into my kid's sports. Keep perspective. Don't be nutty. But the truth is, I'm over there cheering at like a 12-year-old volleyball game, like
leading chance,
like it's the national championship game. Come on, what are you looking at? You know, I mean,
you're just short of painting your chest. And
it's a slippery slope. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I would feel differently if we were in that boat right now. Like if we had 10 and 12 or 15 year olds, even, that were really plugged in, and that was such a big part of our life. But we're not really in that state.
Instead, I got an urgent phone call in a commercial break earlier in the show from the 17-year-old who was dialing me to ask me.
Did we run out of data or something?
No. She wanted to know the deadline at her school to get a parking permit.
Oh,
so she
yes.
can park in the school parking lot has 2 more days.
Oh boy.
And I said to her,
which basically,
you got to turn in all your assignments before we can have this conversation.
By getting a car.
But that's kind of where her mindset is. She also wanted to know, what am I going to be driving? Mm. So Bess over at Gresham Ford, no. I started off. Do you remember your first car?
Yeah.
What was it?
Forest Green Honda Civic. 4-door.
What year are we talking? How old was the car?
It was only a couple of years old. My mom did not want me driving an old vehicle. Like, for her own peace of mind, she wanted me to drive a vehicle that she knew wasn't just going to, like, break down on the side of the road and leave me stranded. So, yeah, so
my parents had the opposite effect.
Like, get that car for $500.
Let's see how resourceful this kid is.
Probably served you well.
I had a 1977 Buick LeSabre 2-door.
Wow.
This was a car that I was driving. It was 12 years old when I got it. And, the doors were so heavy, I had to bend my knees to close. Like, I couldn't close it unless I got a good knee bend and got a good push on the door. That's how this thing was a boat, and it got terrible gas mileage. And I know this because, you know, and Pete, you may remember gas prices like 1988, 1989. You could get a gallon, I think, for around a buck. my parents would be like, you know, here's $5. Gas up for the week. This 1977 Buick LeSabre probably got 8 miles to the gallon.
Jeez.
I had everybody asking me for rides, and I was like, I don't know if I can afford to take you home, man. I'm gonna need to can you give me 50 cents for gas? Like, I had to be that kid, because I ran out of gas in that car probably once a month.
Oh jeez.
And I can remember one time I ran out of gas. This is the low point of me as a driver. I am just out of high school, probably recently graduated. It's summertime. I'm pulling into a gas station on fumes, which I felt like I was always on fumes. And my parents had four kids. My parents weren't like putting $20 into the gas tank. They just weren't that, you know. And so I can remember pulling into a gas station, and I'm like, I'm running out of gas. And I'm going, please get into the gas station. Get in. And I pull in. I barely make it to the pump. I park. And all of a sudden, I look and I reach down in my pocket. I don't have any money.
Oh, no.
I have no wallet, nothing. And I look on the floor, and there's like 12 cents on the floor. And I'm rummaging around the car trying to find, like, can I find a dollar to put in gas? And this gentleman who was at the next pump must have seen me. And he came over and he reached into his wallet and he said, here's a dollar.
Oh.
And he knew.
Wow.
So if I ever see you high school kid,
you gotta pay that forward. You need to pay that forward someday.
I'm looking around for that opportunity. If you ever see somebody rummaging around underneath their car, he must have just felt awful for me. Look at that poor kid.
Oh, jeez.
I had so little gas in that car that when I put in a dollar of gas, I was concerned it still wouldn't start.
Right.
You know what I mean?
You were in a deficit.
I'm like, it may not be in there. The car may go, not enough to start it up.
You do live much more comfortably with a gas tank that is on the verge of empty more than any person that I know. Like, you're that guy that's like, oh yeah, it's on E, but I still have a good 10 to 15 miles after
I'm comfortable there. That's where I grew up. I'm not saying that that's good for your car, because it's probably not. Don't at me with, you know, hey, that's not good for the engine and all this stuff. I'm not saying it's good for the car. And I'm not saying I haven't run out either. Knock on wood. But I do know, you know your car.
Yes.
And I knew that 77 Buick LeSabre. When that 77 Buick LeSabre said, hey, you're just about out of gas.
It meant it.
It barely got the sentence out. And then it was like, and that's such a bad feeling.
There was no grace period.
I pushed that car probably five or six times.
Oh, man.
Pushed that thing.
What color was it?
It was this kind of yellowish gold. It had one of those two-tone roofs that was like half of it was solid car and half was like a foam material. And then
But
the foam was peeling, so it looked like it had dandruff.
Yes. And that's a good look.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
That car,
solid.
That car, no, there was no girl at school that took one look at that car and said, I like to date that guy. If she was with me, she was with me for me.
Yeah.
That's how I
knew.
She
was a keeper, because she wasn't with you for your car, your hot rod.
Nope. It was never, but it had these, we could get about 8 people in that car.
Oh, man.
Had bench seats, you know, bench front, bench back. Just jamming those high school kids.
That's funny, because I have a high school reunion coming up next weekend, a virtual high school reunion. And one of the questions that they asked was, you know, what was your favorite memory from high school or your senior year? And I realized my instantaneous response was the lunchtime trips to like Round Table Pizza and Taco Bell.
You guys had open campus.
We did. Isn't that crazy? And so we would like all pile into one person's car, probably, you know, over capacity, and speed up 122nd to Taco Bell, go through the drive through, and like, that 7-layer burrito never tasted so good. You know?
I have something I want to ask you, but I'm going to wait till after the break.
Okay.
I'm not going to tell you during the break what it is,
great,
no matter how much you ask.
All right.
I want you to leave it right here. If you're looking for a home loan, you want to take advantage of those low interest rates, now's a great time to do it. You can go to goldenoaklending.com. They do a free mortgage checkup. There is no risk, no obligation, and it's a great opportunity for you to have them look at your existing mortgage, find out if you're paying too much. Can they do better with your rate? How much can they lower your payment? And remember, when you refi with Golden Oak Lending, you don't have a mortgage payment for 2 months. That's relief in itself. So lower your payment, shorten the term of your loan, take advantage of those low rates, and use the Portland office of Golden Oak Lending by going to goldenoaklending.com. Tell them Canzano sent you. They'll take care of you. All right, leave it here. I got a question for Anna coming up. Plus, we'll talk some sports. There's definitely news going on in the world of sports. Just to highlight that, the NBA is talking about condensing the 2020-2021 season. I was trying to figure out how are they going to play this 2019-2020 completion and then start the next season all in the same timeline. A lot of people confused about why the NBA is waiting so long to get back to work. I think they're waiting long because they want to allow the players to get in shape now. And then they don't want to have another long, extended time off where players have to sit around again before they can get back to work. Also in the news, UFC is getting ready to host UFC Fight Island in the next month. It's located in the Middle East. UFC President Dana White revealed today that this mysterious island is in Abu Dhabi, in the United Arab Emirates. Is that right? Did I say all that right?
United Arab Emirates, yeah.
Yeah, Abu Dhabi.
Mm-hmm.
The island is going to help them promote their international athletes, and it'll be on Fight Island. And
I thought this idea died. It's still like plowing ahead?
It did.
Wow, okay.
By the way, Flash Entertainment, which located in the in Abu Dhabi, is got a 10% stake in the UFC. Before it's sold. So it's not like this is new. They get the UFC. I like the idea of Fight Island. You know what I mean?
What's there not to like about it?
It's
right?
Intriguing. I don't know if you listened earlier in the show, though. I also like the idea of treasure hunting because there's a man in New Mexico named Forrest Fenn who said 10 years ago he hid treasure and he wrote a poem with clues. And for 10 years, 350,000 people have gone searching for it.
Whoa.
Five people have died. Alabama Adriana compared it to the Goonies. And finally, Forrest Fenn, who's been sued numerous times by people who, A, say they found it or got defrauded out of it or that it never existed and it's a publicity thing. He finally indicated this week that somebody found it last week.
Oh.
He will not provide the name of the person. He will not provide a photograph, although he says he has one. He will not say the location of where it was found, and he will not say the location of where the person lives, only that they live on the East Coast. Do you buy Forrest Fenn, or are you selling this idea?
I don't understand. How could anybody sue him? Like, he's just making the claim that he put a treasure somewhere.
Misleading information. They're saying that they were misled with the clues. One person says that. Another person says there was never a treasure.
Okay.
Another person says she discovered it, and he's defrauded her out of it.
Okay.
I think that the treasure hunters and the treasure barrier guy are made for each other.
Like, I don't know. Maybe we should go geocaching. Do you know what that is?
Sounds complicated.
I think that's what it's called. It's like you go and...
Why can't we just go treasure hunting?
Because I don't... Do you know of some treasure that has yet to be... Don't we need like deep sea exploration?
All right, what do you think of this idea?
Vehicles, vessels?
Why don't you and I put something valuable inside of a treasure chest and bury it somewhere and create clues that the listeners have to go and find? And we give some great prize if they find it.
That's great, unless somebody sues us. I don't want to get
Five
sued
people died.
Over that.
Five
and
people
I don't
died.
Want anybody to die over it.
Yeah, people died looking for Forrest
Fenn's
treasure.
Every year, the Roast Festival has the Roast Festival medallion thing that they do. Which
what do they
involves,
do?
They hide like a medallion of some kind. I'm assuming it looks like a rose. And they provide clues to its discovery. So that's fun. I've always thought about doing that, but it also felt like...
considerable commitment.
Have you ever found anything like that that was valuable? Have you ever found money? Have you ever come across something? We told the story a couple weeks ago about the couple that found, you know, a wad of cash in a mailbag. But have you ever, like, been at the beach and you're walking along and something washes up or, you know?
No.
You're not looking for it. I'm expecting it to happen everywhere I go. I'm looking always. Buried treasure. Where?
That's the optimistic side of you that also plays the lottery.
All right. I have questions. I do play the lottery.
I know. I'm convinced that anybody who plays the lottery is inherently an optimistic person.
I'm shocked when I don't win every week.
Which is incredible.
I don't play
every
week.
Which does lead to the idea that you potentially could win someday. But I don't play, and I guess I must be more pessimistic.
This is how the interview will go after I win the $400 million Mega Millions this week. It'll be you on camera going, I supported him all along.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
He's sharing that money with me.
Oh, I'd be happy to spend it.
All right, bottom line, I got questions for you.
Okay.
All right, you are in your high school Hall of Fame.
Okay? Oh, yeah.
You are a Hall of Famer at Park Rose High School.
Embarrassing.
Also in the high school Hall of Fame at your high school is an astronaut.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, the astronaut still holds the world record for the longest spacewalk in history. So I thought it was really interesting because I was like, what kind of astronaut went to your high school? And ultimately what was determined
she's
is...
She's not just your run-of-the-mill astronaut. Like,
no.
She's done some things.
Susan Helms. She's been on 5 space missions. She has the record for the longest spacewalk. She was out in space for 9 hours, 8 hours, 56 minutes. When you were in high school,
mm-hmm.
like, because I get it now. People at your high school can look at the Hall of Fame display case and they can see Michael Allen Harrison, the pianist. They can see Susan Helms, the astronaut. And they can see formerly Anna Song, who was an anchor, an Emmy, 2-time Emmy winner as an anchor and investigative reporter, and they can go, hey, that could be me one day, right?
I'm grimacing as you say all that. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think I rank up there with, you know, Susan Helms at all.
But I don't think the Hall of Fame is necessarily for the honorees. It's like, it is in other things.
Mm.
I think, like, in the Baseball Hall of Fame, it's for the people who have the accomplishments, or football, they have the accomplishments. Rock and roll. At all, right? They did every drug possible. They made some music too. It's for all those people. But I think the Hall of Fame at a high school
mm-hmm.
is for, hey, this person's super accomplished. You could be like them. I think it's for the kids.
Hey, your picture's up in your high school. We saw that when we went back to visit your parents.
I don't necessarily think I'm a Hall of Famer. My picture's up. They put my picture on the wall.
It's on a wall in a hall.
Yeah, it's not really the Hall of Fame.
No, it's up there for a reason. Why is it?
I have no idea. I've not been back. People have taken pictures of it and they send it to me and they say, look, you're up on the wall. And I say, it's awesome.
Oh.
Nobody called me. I called my high school one time. This is a good story. I reached out to the principal, new principal, because it's not the principal that I had when I was there, right?
Yeah.
Like all these years later, brand new principal. I reached out and I said, hey, I really want to help the journalism program at the campus. Can I donate some money? Mm-hmm. Can I sponsor this thing?
Yeah.
Can I do something to give back?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I'll get right back to you. That was like 6 years ago. Nothing.
No words.
He's like, who's this guy calling me? We put him on the wall. What does he want? You know? But when you go back, like when you look back, who were you looking up to at that time? Did they have a Hall of Fame? Was the astronaut already in when you were there? I have to know. Like, did you walk by and go, one day I want to be in the Hall of Fame? Or how did that happen for you as a kid?
I don't think that Hall of Fame existed yet when I was younger. And I don't know if it exists now. It's been a while since I've walked through that.
It exists. I was over there a couple years ago.
Halls of Park Rose. Who did I look up to? I probably looked up to more like the immediate people around me, teachers that I respected. You know, I already knew I wanted to be a journalist, so I was real into, like, Barbara Walters and 2020 and Peter Jennings and Tom Brokaw, those folks, you know.
Well, I think our kids will look up to you, and I think other people at Park Rose. I had interns who said, oh, your wife's in the Hall of Fame. I had interns who knew that.
Oh, gosh.
So there you go. Hall of Famer on the show today.
Oh,
leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth. Canzano by texting BFT to 484848. Breaking news. You get the, you want it first? You want the info first? You want the chance to win tickets? Text BFT to 484848. It also gets you the weekly newsletter. Rapid fire questions in the last minute or so of this show. Should finish every show like this. If you could be an animal, what animal would you be and why, Anna?
Cougar. Oh, jeez.
You are a cougar. No.
So
who's your favorite superhero?
Wonder Woman.
If you could buy any type of food right now, what would you buy?
Bamboo.
What?
Yeah. Like snack bamboo. It's weird. I know. It's weird.
What?
Wow! Ah, crud.
Do you have any interest to be in space, on a space shuttle or a rocket?
After lots of people go first. I don't want to be on, like, the first, you know, commercial flight.
Favorite TV channel or app?
Oh, well, those are completely different.
Favorite, like, you can only have Netflix or Showtime or HBO or Hulu, or what do you pick?
Oh, you know, I kind of like Hulu. I like Hulu. Yeah.
If your plane was about to crash, who would you want sitting next to you? Don't say me.
Right. No one. I'd want to be alone. I wouldn't want anyone going with me.
Yeah. If, what's your favorite song? Do you have a song?
There's so many.
I have a hard time with that one, too.
I really struggle with that.
All right. Morning, noon, or night?
Night.
How do you like your steak cooked? Rare.
As rare as possible. Gold? Without getting myself sick.
Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Do you have a nickname?
Anna Banana.
There you go. There it is. Sunset or sunrise?
Sunset.
Yeah, I agree with you. Sunrise is too much work. Forget it. Forget it. Leave it here. You got the bald face truth. We're not here for a long time.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the bald face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.